Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee. They go over every vehicle. And a terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Still waiting on Neil. Does give me a chance to mention Taylor Gooch, golfer, who says that since he is not, among others, participating in the Masters, that a Masters green jacket will mean exponentially less because he's on the LIV Tour. The LIV Golf League individual champion in 2023 isn't earning ranking points because of his league affiliation. So he's fallen to 449 in the rankings because it doesn't recognize LIV participation. Now, I can understand why he's upset about that, but he's also getting a lot of money to play LIV. In an Australian Golf Digest interview, Gooch says not having top players in the field only dilutes the end results. If Rory McIlroy goes and completes his career Grand Slam without some of the best players in the world, that's going to be an asterisk. No. It's just reality. I think everybody wins whenever the majors figure out a way to get the best players in the world. Correct on the second part, but it's not an asterisk. Sorry, it's still the Masters. It's still the green jacket. There is no asterisk. Look, Gooch freely gave up his PGA Tour membership in 2022. He moved to LIV. He had one PGA career win, earned earned $9 million on the PGA Tour, but the guys won $46 million in the first 2 years of LIV. Okay? That's why these guys are making the move. Oh, you can talk about all the... I always love when it turns into some sort of passion play about it. He's set for life. I mean, $9 million is a lot of money. But $46.5 million in 2 years? Wow. And he won three tournaments last year and the LIV title, but he did not get one of the three invitations to the Masters. One of them went to Joaquin Niemann of Chile. And they, you know, look, they're going to have to figure out a way to do this, especially if it's the world golf, if it's world golf rankings, right? Well, last I checked, LIV is in the world. They're not playing on Mars. So somebody's got to figure it out. Well, so just let me know when we have Neil. And we'll talk with him. I'm going to be in his city on Friday night and Saturday, as a matter of fact. So I will be up in the Minneapolis area. We'll be downtown Minneapolis for Penn State and Minnesota. But tonight the story is Iowa. Penn State, Iowa both tied at 8 and 9. So right now Penn State would be the 8 seed. Iowa would be the 9 seed. Now, what does that mean? That means that Penn State would wear white jerseys and Iowa would wear the black ones. It's okay. We're done. That's what it means. what does it mean? And it still means that whether you finish eighth or ninth, that your next game would be against the one seed, which is Purdue. Really good article today. Really good article today. By The Athletic. On Zach Edey. Now, you know I've talked about Zach Edey, the athlete, before. I've talked about him as a hockey player. I've talked about him as a baseball player. My goodness, he's been there for 4 years, so I've had plenty of time to talk about him. But Zach Edey, his number one passion, and I've pointed this out before, so that part of the article to me is not new, but his number one passion as a kid, he wanted to be a hockey player. And he played hockey, skating, you know, forward, backward, you know. They showed pictures of him. It was great. They incorporated pictures. And the pictures were great. Yeah, towering over the other kids. So then he went and he played Little League Baseball. He was a good hitter, could run, and he pitched. Well, one day, according to the story, and this happens to every kid when they're pitching, he let one loose inside. It hit the kid in the arm. I mean, it got him pretty good. All right. But it was in the arm. It wasn't in the head. It was the arm, shoulder, in that area there. And the kid is down on the ground and is in pain. I mean, I think all of you out there that have ever played, whether it's fast pitch softball or baseball, and you've been hit by a pitch, okay, it at minimum stinks. And at maximum, it really hurts. Well, he threw the pitch and he hit the kid. Well, everybody comes running out. They're checking on the kid. They're checking on the kid. Zach Edey's manager comes out. He's like checking as well just to help out. Finally, somebody says, hey, wait. They said to Zach's coach, he said, you better go take care of your kid. He goes, what are we talking about? He says, he points out to the mound. And Edey is sitting down on the mound, and he's in absolute tears because he feels like he hurt this kid. He says, you better go take care of your kid. Like, oh. That's how sensitive he is. And I'm not surprised by that because, you know, here we are in the land of Iowa where, of course, the hero in the state is not a men's basketball player. It is not a wrestler. It is not a football player. It is a women's basketball player, Caitlin Clark. Zach Edey is the same as Caitlin Clark in this regard. After every game, Caitlin Clark comes out and signs autographs, all of them, and does selfies, everything, after every game. Home, away, she did it at the Jordan Center last year. She does it everywhere she goes. She understands she is the face of the game, which brings with it that, you know, look, because right now, I think, to be honest with you, I've talked about her shooting of late. I think she's starting to get tired. There's a lot of pressure on her all the time to be the show, to help her team win games, which she is, right? But it's starting to show in her shooting a little bit. She's in a slump. And Zach Edey's the same way. After every game, I see Zach out there signing autographs and doesn't leave until he's done. And I know when back in January I was leaving the arena and I walked past him and I just stopped and I said something to him about it briefly. And he appreciated it. But we see a guy like that and you see Zach's massive. He's massive. And you get an impression just on look. And look, how many Zach Edey games have I called now? I don't know. Somewhere between 7 and 10, maybe. I don't know, 7 to 9? Somewhere in that range. But I've seen him enough pregame, I've seen him enough postgame. All right, and you could just tell, you know, that look he has when he's playing, yeah, that's his game look, but that's not his persona. And the same thing with Caitlin Clark. She's out there. It's not her persona either. I mean, she takes care of every obligation. He takes care of every obligation. And it turns out that each is going to be the National Player of the Year. And each is going to win the Wooden Award this year when it's all said and done. Now, I have a men's vote. I don't have a women's vote. But there's a lot of pressure on young people. And look, I know they're all getting NIL, and that's going to be now, Zach Edey did say yesterday he's not coming back next year. I am changing my outlook on him, where I said he didn't have a chance of playing in the NBA and that I wasn't sure if he was going to be drafted. There's no question in my mind he'll be drafted. And that's the other part. I know he plays so close to the basket that you don't think he's a good athlete, but the reality is you can't play hockey, you can't play baseball, and you can't play basketball unless you're a really good athlete. You can't. But his game on the NBA level is limited, only because he doesn't have the key is he doesn't have a face-up game. Now, you watch him practice, and when he's practicing, he only practices the shots he's going to take in a game. You know how many guys I see, Todd, during the course of the season where they're out there just taking shots, and those are shots they would never take in a game? I see it all the time.
Like, I was going to say more than 75%, probably.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'll watch warm-up and go, what are you doing? Like, you're not going to take that shot in a game. What, are you kidding me? I don't mind you taking a couple just to have a little fun out there, because, you know, you should have a little fun when you're warming up. I mean, like, not every shot is life and death. It's warm-up. But I'll never forget Greg Odom, who's now the assistant coach at Butler, watching him warm up one time, and every single shot he took was a game shot. Edie's the same way. Now, since Caitlin Clark's range is from mid-court to the basket, any shot she takes in warm-up is a game shot. I mean, they have the spot marked on the floor where she hit the one that broke the NCAA record. I'd say about 30, 31 feet. It's like okay. Because Penn State practiced in there last night, so. They've been to shoot around here during the show, so I didn't go over for shoot around today. I'll get Mike in the pregame this afternoon. So,
yeah. I don't think people understand how long a 31-foot shot is unless you actually probably stand there. It doesn't look as long as it is when you watch it on TV.
Yeah, I'd say like 30 feet, probably right in that range. You know, because the 3-point line comes out to. And men's basketball, it's like, I don't know, almost 22 feet. So my estimate was like maybe 8 feet beyond, maybe 9. So that's why you're talking about, you know, a 30, 31-foot shot. But the key is, and this is another credit of, you know, it's not just form, but you know how strong you have to be to get it that far?
In your normal jumper? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean... that's what people don't realize. The form and also the strength, the leg strength to get the, you know, to do that, not easy. But yeah, no, it's marked on the floor. And it's not oppressive. It's a very, I would say that the decal they have on the floor that says 22 is, I don't know, 2 to 3 inches. So it's not oppressive. It's out there, but, you know. So I think one or two guys went out there to see if they could make it. A couple did. So, like, okay. But after that, everybody just took their shots. You know, they mostly just took shots last night. Today they did a workout, and there was a usual shoot-around. But, you know, they sell every game out here. They sell every wrestling match out here. But they do not sell out men's basketball. It will not be a sellout tonight. It's just the way it is right now. And this is going to be interesting because the Big Ten tournament in Minneapolis on the women's side is for the first time ever a sellout. Now, if she goes to the WNBA, there's a very good chance it then reverts back. You know, because, look, people are buying tickets in anticipation of seeing her play. That's the effect she has on the game. And they're playing at Minnesota tomorrow, and they've got Ohio State here Sunday. Right now, Ohio State would be the number one seed in the women's tournament, not Iowa. And right now, I'm not sure Iowa would be a one seed in the women's tournament. I mean, they might be a two right now. If Ohio State wins again, that may be the case.
I think they are. I was watching a little bit of UCLA and Colorado last night, and they're the women's bracketology guy, I think, has them as the top number two seed.
All right. Now, if they beat Ohio State, they'll flip spots.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's as simple as that.
Well, as you know as well as I do, you want to be in those top four seeds in a women's tournament, so you're hosting.
Oh, yeah. You're hosting the first two games. I mean, life's good.
Yes.
And being the number one overall seed in the men's tournament, that really helps because you get to pick what region you're in, which keeps you as close to home as possible. So, I mean, so there are advantages to being good in the regular season. That's why, you know, and again, I pointed this out about Houston the other day. New conference, all new opponents, and they're winning. Now, let's take it to Mike Rhodes. Mike and his staff change conferences and had to learn all about the Big Ten. And look what they're doing. I mean, they're 8-9. I mean, after the Bucknell game, how many of you thought Penn State would be 8-9 in the Big Ten? I mean, really, show of hands. No? All right, didn't think so. Okay. Give them credit. And they've had to learn everybody. See, that's the key. You have to learn everybody. I always talk about, okay, let's take this guard. He's, you know, I've been coaching in the league now for, you know, 3-4 years, whatever. Hey, this guy played for them last year as a true freshman. We saw him last year twice in person. Yeah, let's look at the video. Hey, you know what? He's a little bit better here. He's a little bit better. He's about the same there. He's kind of taking a step back there because you already have a gauge of the guy. When you're doing this, your gauge is always off video and nothing in person yet. Right, not easy to do. Not easy. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Neil Kulong will join us at 2:35 today. And more coming up tomorrow. We got a couple of guests coming up tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun. And two more coming up on Thursday. Sweeney Murdy is going to join us tomorrow. Talk Major League Baseball. Joe Lenardi is going to open the show tomorrow. And then on Thursday, Tony Knopp and Jody Mack. So a lot going on and fun. Then it's off to Minneapolis for the first of two stops in about a 10-12 day span in Minneapolis, something like that. Patriot League tournament's coming up. Was the last week of the regular season for the Patriot League, I believe, right?
I think they play Saturday and Monday this week.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. And I think I mentioned the coaches show on Thursday. I was told today Well, let me put it this way. Somebody mentioned to me today, I'm still waiting for somebody to send me an email or a text. Don't worry, Steve will handle it. Like, come on, guys. A little advance notice wouldn't hurt the cause. But I've been told that Cale Sanderson is going to join us on Thursday. And then Mike Rhodes in the second half hour. So that should be a dynamite show coming up on Thursday. I mean, I don't know if we've ever done the show on February 29th before.
I hope that's not an omen for anything.
Well, that's a good omen if I'm going to get Cale Sanderson.
Well, that's true.
And Mike Rhodes. That's pretty darn good to me.
Just so they're not arguing over who gets Rec Hall.
No, Cale, you know what?
Yeah, I know.
That's one thing about Cale. This is... Cale is very much a team guy. And my respect for him is as high as you can get it. Just, I'm talking about as a person.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service departments where they need more technicians than ever. So if you're looking for a job, give them a call. Routine, difficult, they handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online, sunburymotors.com. Friday night and into Saturday, I will be in Neil Coulong's neck of the woods. Sir, always a pleasure to connect with you. You are critical to what we do.
As always, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you for having me.
It's, 71 degrees here in Iowa City. The low tonight is 13. What's going on? That's like, really?
Welcome.
It's great. Yeah, I'm going to be in Minneapolis twice in a 10, 12-day span. So, got a lot going on up there. So, here we are. We get to free agency and combines. So, I want to talk about the free agency part of it first, Neil. There are a lot of running backs that are right now not going to be franchise tagged. Saquon Barkley is still a little bit in the gray area right now. How do you view the running back situation based on who is available out there and what their value might be based on current payment?
I think it's the odd position in the NFL that's not exactly worth the franchise tag. I mean, the franchise tag is really kind of top of the market. I mean, it's there's McCaffrey and there's everybody else. Right. I think you can put Barkley into that level, but this is a team that is currently undergoing a crisis of identity. I'm not really sure. Simply put, when you have your defensive coordinator scorching all earth on his way out of town for a team that was in the playoffs the previous year and suffered, what, 15 games without the quarterback that they just paid a bunch of money to, for the situation to have gotten that bad, that fast in New York, there's got to be a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. And maybe some of that frustration is in the fact that they did not commit fully to Barkley right away. He's a player that can do a lot of things. He's a three-down guy. He's capable of producing at the level, you know, maybe not at you know, the top of Christian McCaffrey's market, but he's one of the few guys that could be up there if given the opportunity. I don't know, though, how much money he gets on the open market, and most of it is because, unlike basically every other position in the NFL, there's a detrimental effect to running backs on the open market. You don't see any of them getting paid in free agency. They get tagged. Sometimes here and there they get extended, or they go on the open market like a car that just drove off the lot. They're not getting more than what they had previously. Barkley, that situation is just so odd to me, but I think that's going to set up everything else. But there are always reasonable to decent running backs who are available, and that's just simply because teams aren't utilizing enough of them, and it doesn't seem like they're struggling to find running backs throughout the draft, any round to undrafted free agency, who can come in and play a role for the team. So it's almost working backwards up, you know, in that you can fill your third running back at the absolute league minimum. They're paying them $25 an hour to fill that spot on the team. They might be up and down from the practice squad and make even less than that. The previous guy who was like that is now the second running back. Finding your first guy really doesn't seem to be as important, or certainly not prioritized to NFL teams, with the exception of a few of them. And it really depends on the type of offense they're wanting to run. Barkley, I think, represents all of it right now as far as the direction where everything is going. You look at Najee Harris's situation in Pittsburgh, that's similar. Probably the better running back, but the guy behind him is a year younger, has fewer carries, and produces at a pretty comparable level. And the price difference between the two is astronomical when you start thinking about the franchise tag or a 50-year option. Every team is going to be into that if they invest a premium pick into a running back and then give them the bulk of the carries for however long. So in my mind, it just makes more sense economically to look to find guys and run them as a group. You know, it really doesn't seem to have a ton of advantage, minus a few guys, of being one guy carrying everything. You know, Pittsburgh can certainly tell you about, in the past, some of the best teams they've had recently fell short due to lack of running back depth. As ironic as that is, considering it seems everybody has running backs, Pittsburgh lost them all when they needed them, which probably led to the desire to draft a Najee Harris and give him the yeoman's share of the work. That's not typical of the market at all. In fact, there might even be no more than three teams in the league that would have that kind of an issue. Overall, it's just I don't know what they're going to do. But when you have some of the veterans last season almost talking about forming their own union within the union finding a way to raise their pay, which is just, like, if you're playing that card publicly, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. There's just no way that's going to happen. They aren't happy about it. They can see that they're not happy about it. And I think there's going to be something of a mini labor standoff. I'm not suggesting anyone's not going to do anything, but you're going to hear a lot of running backs not doing a whole lot in training camp. And I think there's going to be a reason for that. And teams almost can't really argue with them about it. But at the same time, they're going to end up being just mercenaries around the league. Play with one team, then another team, then another team. It's going to be really hard for them to string together guaranteed money moving forward. Basically, they're going to have to be the offensive player of the year. And I don't know how many times that's even going to happen.
Well, no. Let's look at a series of examples. Baltimore, top team AFC regular season. Gus Edwards, Super Bowl champion Kansas City, back-to-back. Isaiah Pacheco. All right. Cleveland Browns, no Nick Chubb, still made the playoffs. Now, Chubb's a terrific player, but it shows that if you have somebody functional at the position, and especially you have a great quarterback, you can get there.
Yeah, the teams that you mentioned all drafted a running back with a premium pick. You know, yeah. Clyde Edwards-Helaire in Kansas City kind of fell out of favor there. They have a better weapon now, somebody that probably fits more of what they're doing, and they're okay with, you know, the difference between the two. But as soon as Edwards-Helaire is not, you know, somebody that needs to be, as soon as he gets to extension time, he's probably not going to be there. He might be able to find something else. I don't know when the last time J.K. Dobbins played was, but he has barely played in his career up to that point. And Gus Edwards has been, in my opinion, one of the better running backs in the NFL. And they get him for nothing. There's too many examples every single season of this. I really like that Ford kid in Cleveland. I'm not talking about replacing Nick Chubb, but Ford looks pretty good for who he is, for where he came from. There isn't a whole lot separating the mid-level from the top as far as the NFL is concerned nowadays, and that drives the value of that top level way down. And it's so interesting to me because it's the polar opposite, certainly at the quarterback position, to a huge degree the wide receiver position. Edge rushers probably, you know, maybe the most distant, because those guys are going to get paid for playing 12 snaps a game. And every team that you just listed has one of those players like that. You know, Jadeveon Clowney made a lot of money to not play all that much. He wasn't an everyday player, and he's on, what, his 15 now? He's going to have another one next year, I'm sure. I'm not downplaying his value or anything. It's just that the journeyman edge rusher has literally 10 times the market that a running back does. And you can understand where that comes from, but when you put the dollars... comparatively speaking, when you match them up dollar for dollar, it's really hard for a team to say, well, I want to, you know, pay a top of market value for a running back when I have to pay a situational edge rusher because you need to hit the quarterback. They're throwing the ball 66% of the time on average now.
Yeah.
That position is just far too important. And it's not that it's harder or easier to find that kind of guy, but you look at Carl Loftus in the playoffs for the Chiefs. How many big plays did he make? He's a later first-round pick, which means there's probably, what, 8 edge rushers that got drafted before him? Running backs can make an impact. It's just they're able to do it after being drafted in the 5th and 6th round pretty routinely. So you know that you're going to get that. Why are you going to spend more for another position? Why would you spend more for that position when you are going to have more impact players that you're going to need to use those premium assets on and those top-of-market dollars on?
Exactly. Now, it's the combine this week. So let's start with, what do you take stock in the combine? Is it running 40s and shuttles, or is it the part we don't see, and that's the interviews?
I think overall for the teams, it's the interviews. And the frustrating thing is, that's the one thing you're not going to hear about. You get the medical questions for the ones that you knew existed answered to some degree, at least for what we can know today. There are players that missed a good chunk of the season last year. You don't know where they are with everything. You'll probably hear some leaked, certainly positive medical news on some players. There's always the story about, you know, one side being aggrieved versus another in the interview process. That's always kind of entertaining. There's a sense of competition as far as the events go. It's a total package thing, and I think people, not that the NFL and media in general don't help this, but there's a certain focus on the combine that I'm willing to bet is not the focus for nearly everybody in attendance in a team capacity. They need the combine. It's not useless. It's just people that think that it's useless think that the only reason they're there is to watch them run the 40. They're there to meet them, to talk to them. They don't get every single opportunity everywhere to get to everybody. Given a choice, and keep in mind, they have very limited windows. There are so many guys they can meet with, and they only have so much time to do it. They have to spread that out strategically, and the combine is a big opportunity for them to sit down and at least, you know, try to feel the player out a little bit. They don't get a ton of time to do that, but it gives them the ability to say, you know what, we're interested in this guy after this. We wanted to talk to him. We'll advance him forward. We didn't get enough from him, but we want to kind of dig in more. Maybe we'll set up an interview with him after, his pro day. Maybe we'll take him out to dinner. Maybe we'll bring him in for a visit. That sort of thing. It's more to advance the timeline of the off season. And teams are militant about the detail and the notes that are going into the players that they're talking to. These are significant investments, and it's also not exactly good odds. It's a great draft if you draft 7 times and 3 of your guys end up being starters within 3 years.
That's right.
That, that's that sounds horrible in most cases, right? You know you're going to fail if you want to define he's not an NFL starter as a failure. It isn't entirely fair, and I'm not sure there's a great way to really determine this, but some teams need a great draft class. They have to start building something, and it's not even going to be something that flips you into a Super Bowl contender in that first year. But they have to know everything, and they have to have guys that fit in every single way possible. And you're doing it in such an artificial environment, they're going to tell you everything that you want to hear. You know, I don't think they necessarily take stock in scripted answers, so they have to come up with questions that are going to put the candidate out of his comfort zone a little bit. And some of them, as we've joked about over the years, go way too far and clearly have no experience interviewing people at all.
No. It's a
really thin line to draw. And more of the necessity of the combine is to get as much as they can out of somebody and then make sure that what you watched on film matches what he does as an individual. I think a lot of the drills are the ones you don't talk about are perhaps more important. I find there's a great connection between overall athleticism and the broad jump, for example. People don't really know what's good or what's not good in a broad jump. The shuttle, probably even more confusing and mysterious. There are great parallel skills to that. The 40, while it's going to show somebody who's really fast and somebody who's really slow, the difference in that middle group probably isn't all that much, except for let's make sure the guy is in shape. Let's make sure he's about what we thought he would be watching him on film. Things like that, I mean, it's important, but they're not taking this guy because he ran a 4.43 over the guy who ran a 4.46. That's not going to be the reason why they would ultimately do that in one run, one time. They're going to be around the 4.4 range. They know that they're around the 4.4 range. That's fast. You know, you can kind of measure it as that. But confirmation that what you see on tape and what you've heard about him or whatever backs that up a bit. What they want, though, is to sit and talk to him about who he is, what he's like as a player, those kinds of things, whatever they can get from a character level from the player. That's ultimately what the combine is really about, but that's not getting people to tune into it. You know, there was a time when the combine was more mystery than anything. You didn't hear anything about it. You saw still images of dudes running around in spandex. You didn't get to watch. To this day, I still don't watch it. I mean, it's as boring a sporting event as there is, if you want to even call it that.
We refer to it as the Underwear Olympics. But it's... See, to me, there is so much tape on players. You can see what kind of football player they are and who knows how to play. Larry Fitzgerald was a 4.63 40 guy. Well, guess what? He knows how to play football. I don't need a combine to show me Larry Fitzgerald knows how to play.
Yeah, when you have guys like that, they can stand out in ways that Fitzgerald in particular, more of, you have to look at it's more frustrating because the fans today will find a bevy of 6'4", 6'5", receivers that can run 4'4", 4'3".
Right, exactly.
That's not normal for a guy that size, as big as Fitzgerald was even when he was 20 years old.
Yeah.
They didn't run that fast. But at the same time, you look at his agility, which is freakish. A guy half his size was as agile as Fitzgerald was in the open field. And you can see that on tape. His vertical ability, his ability to play above defenders, to go high point a ball, he looked like a high-end safety going for something up in the air. He had just a completely abnormal sense of the ball in the air. You watch those things and you see a Hall of Fame potential candidate.
Yeah.
I don't care if he ran a 4.63. Look at what this guy can do. We don't need him burning guys down the numbers 10 times a game. We need him working to get open. He has the footwork. He has the balance. all of these things for a guy who's half his size, yet he plays like a guy who's twice his size.
That's right.
And he happens to be 6'5". I'm okay with Larry Fitzgerald. You know, this is a top five guy. I don't think 40 times matter to a guy like that. But then you get a guy like Calvin Johnson, who literally showed up not planning on working out, got bored, borrowed cleats from a friend of his, and then ran a 4.29 or whatever it was. That's, you know, that you're talking that's a wonder of the world. You know, it's kind of a fun thing to witness. Does that make him a better wide receiver? No. I don't, in my opinion, no. Running straight is the one thing they don't do in football. You know, it's in a way the opposite test of everything that they are. But Calvin Johnson was a marvel, and he was a joy to watch. If you appreciate athleticism, you see what's normal and what isn't. So there is a sense of you know, spectator enjoyment that goes into it, but it can't be taken at such a ground level. You know, some guys are fast, some guys aren't. You know, that's maybe that's the difference between third round and sixth round to some level. But the top guys are the ones that you're watching. And most of the time, the dude, there's going to be a guy that runs 4.29. There's usually one. Is he going to be a top 10 pick? Probably not. They usually aren't. There's a lot more that goes into football than just your ability to start on a gun from a three-point stance, a four-point stance, and run straight for 40 yards. You know, there's a lot more that goes into it, and it's only one part of the overall athletic package that a player represents.
Well, some guys run fast, some don't. I'm the latter. All right, so, Neil, appreciate it as always, my friend. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, that wraps it up here from Iowa today. 70 degrees, and the low tonight is 13 with some snow tonight. Really? Back in the Sunbury Motors studio tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun, as always.